What a great song to end on. Give just a little bit more, take a little bit less. Right on. Homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show. My conscious brothers coming in here.
Hey.
Hey.
What's up, Felicia?
Well, we're going to have a great show today on Koi Soapbox. I always am so blessed to have different people here. Masha, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, Masha.
Hi.
And Aloha. That's Marshall. And are you on three or four?
Three.
Okay. And then, I'm sorry, hey, listeners out there, Community Radio. And today on Kauai Soapbox, we're going to be addressing a number of community concerns and solution efforts. So at the beginning of the show, we're going to have a light overview of a couple of two items that are people need to be giving some feedback on. We'll hear from Marshall a little bit about national politics. I have Masha in the studio. We're going to have a really great conversation with her in this first hour. And then in the second hour, we're going to be talking about some of the water issues that are coming up. There's a proposal and a plan. It's beyond the proposal amount. There's been a finding of no significant impact to put an 18-inch water pipe, another water pipe from Wailua over through the mountain to it already goes through the mountain, but a pipe to manage the water to come over to the Hanama'olu effort and some of the new developments, housing developments that are going on. So in that hour, Adam Asquith and Debbie Jackson, Kalo Farmer, are going to be on talking about what their concerns are. And at around the 5:30 time, Kirk Psyche from the Department of Water will be joining into the conversation to have some follow-up. And, you know, what the goal will be is to look at what do we need to be concerned about, try and limit it to what we need to be concerned about, and then, you know, see what the plan is. So that's what this show is. Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store and Second Skin.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostulas. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Doctor recommended for expecting mothers and children. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke'ea o ka'aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. We really appreciate your support, and we're coming up on a fund drive soon. There'll be a number of different ways that people can help, and you're going to be learning more about it. But always what can happen is you just go to www.kkcr.org, and there's a Donate Now button. I know I choose to make my donations on a monthly basis, so there's always that trickle coming in, and it's less of a hit for me at one time. So anyway, we appreciate you, listeners, supporters, and handful of things going on. I want to just acknowledge another angel. I'm not going to go long on this right now because I'll do something a little bit more next week because it's just this morning. But a good friend of mine, wonderful person, Mike Dyer from Kilauea, has joined the rest of the family up there. And We'll honor him in a week because this is just so right now. But something nice for him and both also Uncle Azarapa and Joey Hashimoto. We've had three wonderful kupuna in our community that have transcended. And the upside is that these are people who have given much, helped much, lived valuable lives and taken care of so many people, and they've been well loved, and so gratitude for a life well lived. So I can share that, and love to their families. Marshall.
Hey.
Right now, I believe the vice presidential debate is still going on, or is it over?
It's going on till 4:30.
Okay, so I saw some of the opening for it, but I didn't see the whole thing.
Just to review, we have Governor Tim Kaine as the vice presidential running mate for Hillary Clinton, and Governor Mike Pence for the vice presidential running mate of Donald Trump.
Okay.
So, it's easy to forget about these guys, and I almost did, and I thought, you know what, it's kind of important, really.
Actually very important, and when they select their running mate, it says a whole lot about the direction of which voter they're really trying to court.
Right.
To bring in, and the reason that matters is because there will be an influence, and that person is the president of the Senate, and they are the next in line for office. And so it's a big deal. So we have kind of a conservative Democrat and an ultra-conservative Republican. Would that be correct?
Yeah, I would say, I guess for a Democrat, Tim Kaine is conservative. Yeah, he seems pretty moderate. Actually, on some things, he's a little bit liberal. But,
okay.
I didn't catch a whole lot of it. But from what I heard, I actually felt for Mike Pence a bit. He's out there. Got to not just run on his own record, but actually defend all of the things that Donald Trump has said and done throughout the whole election season.
Oh, my. Uh-huh.
Right.
Because he's I don't want to call him a loose cannon, but he's in all different directions.
Right. So, and you know what? You know, some things he defended, some things he just flat out denied. Donald Trump says one thing, Mike Pence says no, he doesn't say that. You know, other things he just sort of evaded and twisted and turned in the wind a little bit. It was, it was almost hard to listen to. But, you know, overall, it is hard to listen to. It's hard to listen to this campaign anymore. This election is become not fun anymore, really, and it's hard to talk about. People are so charged one way or another. It's like no matter what you say, somebody's going to be hurt or offended. We're just polarized.
Right. And then, like, for me, it's almost gotten easier since the Democratic National Convention because I'm not attached to any candidate. I don't really see a very big difference. I mean, there's obviously a difference, but I don't see any vehicle I want to get on and ride with. Have you been following the polls? You're usually pretty good with that.
I actually heard polls, latest ones last night.
Okay, so how's that?
Jotted down. CNN has Clinton at 47%, Trump at 42%, Johnson at 7%, and Stein at 2%. So this is a big improvement for Clinton over Trump, and comes following the debate. CBS last night had Clinton at 45%, Trump at 41%, Johnson 8%. Stein 3%. So in one poll, Clinton's up by 5 points, and in the other, she's up by 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stein is up by 4?
No, Clinton.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that's a lot if that was Jill Stein.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Up by 4. Oh, she tripled her numbers. Though, you know what? When I look at the polls, I always look at all this counter argument, and there is, you look at who they'll specifically interview groups of people, and they'll make the phone calls to districts where it's going to be favorable to the outcome that they want it to be favorable to. So they can manipulate everything. So I look at these things as just a loose guideline, and who knows what will really happen. On election night, I believe that's November 8th, Marshall and I will be here in the studio from 4 to 6 reviewing the national outcome, and then 8 to 11, are you coming in with me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We're going to be really looking at the local election. Last night, I was there for helping with the broadcast for the local candidate forum, and I have a lot more interest in that. Masha, I can never say your last name. Can you say it slowly?
Okay. Kukanik.
Kukanik?
Yes.
Did I say it right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that's the first time. I just always let you say it. So Kukanik. So what kind of last name is that?
It's Austrian, but it's not a very common name in Austria either. It's from a southern part of Austria, and any kind of N-I-G name endings, they usually they're located in that southern part, which is close to Slovenia, and then you come down to Croatia and the southern Slavic. So anything that ends with niche is very similar, but like I said, it's...
Okay, well, that is interesting, and I guess a reason why I'm pulling you in right now, later we're going to be talking, I liked how you framed it as ethnographic research. Maybe tell us for a moment, and we're going to be talking about that more at like 4:30, but I'm going to bring you into some of this earlier dialogue that we're going to have. But what does ethnographic research mean?
Right. So ethnographic research is one of the prime methods that anthropologists use in their search out for data and information. More and more other social sciences have adapted that too. And ethnographic, if you take it apart, ethnos is sort of like, you know, the people in their cultural
differences,
yeah. And then the graphos or graphics to sort of come to write a dissertation. Some people do this insane work, or they come up with an article or a film or any sort of document or some sort of final product that can be called an ethnography. So ethnographic research is often based on doing participant observation, and that means that you choose a particular, you look out where are certain issues or certain areas, people that you think there's some topic that is of concern or of interest that you would like to, you know, research more and put the light on. There's increasingly more collaborative research in that area too, where you collaborate more with the people in the field. And okay, so you basically hang out and talk and really spend a lot of time with people in order to understand oftentimes very complex issues.
And I met you a few years ago when you were here for a couple of years, and you were on and off for a couple of years helping with Kanui Kapuna Hawaiian Charter School, and mostly with the high schoolers. So
right,
in a little bit, we'll get to that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to be able to introduce you, so when the listeners hear your voice and they're like, who's this? Okay, an Austrian girl who has been living and studying in the United States and Canada and for quite a number of years.
Yes.
And definitely with an emphasis on Hawaii and, you know, the impacts of what happens in our ethnographic area here, even or what's happening over here. I get the graphics a little different than that. So when we are talking about American national politics, which I feel like is not very deep over here since Bernie Sanders lost. I mean, it doesn't seem to be near the hot topic that it was. We were overwhelmingly for Bernie Sanders. But, you know, you look at the yard signs and stuff like that, none of it is the national politics. And there in our local politics, I have to say that when I look at who's running for office, sort of reminds me of when you're voting for who's going to be on student council in high school. I mean, you like everybody, you know, so it's almost like weird having to pick this candidate over that candidate because everybody has some value. I might not agree with everybody, but to me, like my ideal county council, for example, I would hope I don't agree with everybody. I wouldn't want seven people who saw things the same way as I do, because if that was the case, guaranteed we're going to be making some mistakes. What you want is a hand of cards that looks like the diversity of the people in the regions and the viewpoints, so that when they come up with decisions, it's going to be best for most. Certainly every decision is going to disappoint somebody, but that's the kind of outcome that we want. And for the most part, I would say that our politics here are pretty civil. And I just want to give about 3 or 4 minutes to this. So it's a big question for a short, I mean, a big topic for a very short moment to answer. But I have been sent things like, there's one Austrian woman who was old woman who went through the whole World War II time period. And she was giving this parallel of what happened. And, you know, when they got free health care and all the perks that were be given out to people, and why everybody was really happy to be, you're not as old as she is, so you're not going to know all that, but all these things that you can hear big pitches on any of the candidates, anybody running for office, all four of the main contenders, they have pieces of that that was part of what caused the slide into some pretty horrible behavior under the, I hate to use the word Nazis, but I'm going to use it, Nazi Party, just because it's your area of the world, so I'm not like throwing that in your face, but there was bad things that happened in your area of the world, and all those countries that you just mentioned, they've had huge border disputes and big problems in the past millennium. It seemed to be a little bit calmer right now. What do you see relative to what happened in your area of the world? Do you see parallels of what's happening here?
Well, I don't dare to talk too much about the current candidates, because I had just flown in and I sort of really delved
from Canada.
Yes. So the council candidates right now here in
I'm talking about national
level.
Nothing to do with Hawaii. Not making a comparison to Europe in the 40s.
So I think you know, there is probably when you have people to that are susceptible or open to very generic talk about these people are taking our jobs away, and those people are taking our culture away, and we are basically going down, and we need to do something about that, and we're going to, and this is now a party that is saying we're going to create the jobs, and we're going to create, as you said,
healthcare. Stability or whatever.
So at that time when the Nazi regime came into power, I mean, that was a time between the First and the Second World War. And right after the First World War, there was the Austro-Hungarian monarchy basically broke down into all the independent countries. And there was a big, big problem with unemployment. And you had very bad living conditions, and it was not a great time. So that was a good ground to come up with very populistic kind of politics, which you see nowadays too. I mean, it's not, I hate to say it, but it's not necessarily something of the past. Austria has one of the highest, if not the highest, percentage of people voting for the right-wing party that we have right now in the European Union. But the other thing too that oftentimes people seem to forget is that, you know, anti-Semitism was not something that came up in around that time. It was something that has been around at least since the very, the late 19th century, and that has sort of grown and grown in that meantime. So I think if you want to compare it to the United States right now, I'm cautious to do that, but I think there is a similar sense of just a very polemic kind of politics that not necessarily looks at what is the situation right now. And I'm not saying that there are not people that are homeless, that are not people that are without jobs. They are. But I think that oftentimes this collapsing and comparing it to certain historical moments might
oversimplify.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I just have heard people comparing Hillary mm-hmm. with the other
yeah.
person who has the same first three letters, and
Hitler.
And then people also make that same comparison mm-hmm. with Trump, and certainly Hitler was the boogeyman of
yeah.
the last century, maybe rightfully so, but so that seems to be people's fear now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there is still remnants of the Nazi Party in Austria and Germany. You're moving back to Germany.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, remnants, is that correct?
Yes,
is there
and no.
That
I mean, it's you would probably not hear this on the public radio over there, but there is no doubt that this sort of ideology is still alive, or it has resurged.
And maybe not towards the Semitic people, but what about towards the influx of
exactly.
refugees?
So I could say that my generation, when we went to school, we had the opportunity to hear from people that were witnesses and victims from that time to come into the schools before they would pass away. And so I think that we really reached sort of a high point of this awareness of never forget. And I think the left and the people that were very involved in that were a bit too self-righteous to think that that would never happen again, that we would sort of forget and just continue to be racist and continue to think that all these people should just leave because they're taking away our jobs. I think that's you see that across Europe right now. But I mean, I can speak mostly from Austria because that's where I grew up. And I think you know what you said about Hitler. There is an amazing show that Jon Stewart did once about, I call it the Hitlerification,
uh-huh.
Where you take a certain issue that's right now very prevalent, and you take the term Hitler because it just is such a triggering,
yeah.
has such a triggering effect, right? And so you intensify and you amplify it at a level where it's almost impossible to have a conversation after that, right? Because then you're just like, oh, of course, is there anybody who could be worse than Hitler? And I think, I recommend watching that
John Stewart episode.
Yeah.
So,
but if you look just at the characteristics of a political campaign, you have in Donald Trump a nationalist, populist, anti-immigrant, xenophobic policy that is based on a self-styled strong man image, which all correlates very well with fascism and what Hitler represented at that time. So to say, well, some people say that Hillary is Hitler and some people say Donald Trump is Hillary.
I hear both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't think there's any comparison. I don't see the characteristics of Hillary Clinton that are like Hitler, whereas you can sit and look at Donald Trump and say, well, the things that he's overt about are the textbook definition of fascism.
Right, and I think the piece where they place it on the other candidate is if you look at the actions of the United States in terms of the war machine, and there is things that are going in the direction of fascism, right? When we see that these corporations pretty much control the regulatory industries, they control, you know, the banks, all the stuff. The government, it's the tail wagging the dog, you know, it seems like the global industries, and when we see things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, all of that, Trans-Pacific Partnership is almost the definition of fascism. And can you look up fascism? I believe that to be government, you know, for the corporations, or corporate control of government, business control of the government. So let's make sure that we're using the word correctly. But
I don't think we are.
Okay, so that's why I'm having you look it up. Because you can get several different definitions, but it is, you know, where the government is serving the finance thing and not the other way around, not controlling it. The companies control the government, and the government controls the companies. What does it say?
an authoritarian and nationalistic right-wing system of government and social organization. In general use, extreme right-wing, authoritarian, or intolerant views or practice.
Okay, I'm gonna look it up on my Google, because Google brings up different definitions for different people.
Right,
and I actually did look that one up.
Merriam-Webster, maybe?
Yeah.
A way of organizing a society in which a government ruled by a dictator controls the lives of the people, in which people are not allowed to disagree with the government, or very harsh control or authority.
Okay.
I really don't think it has anything to do with corporate influence or control of government.
Okay, so we'll have to... I looked at one and it said that, but like, so that's why I had you look it up. And what we...
Can I just add one more thing? I mean, I think the comparison can be good and bad in some ways, if it's a comparison that sort of, like I said before, shuts off any further conversation, because yes, we've already had that. We should just, you know, look at the history books, and then we should know, right? Well, it seems like we don't, because these things are repeating. And I think that a much more nuanced approach to looking at what's contemporarily happening, and for sure making these relations to what has happened in the past, is very important. But I think it's also sort of a lack of vocabulary, because, yeah, Trump has very many similarities. But one thing, for instance, Donald Trump could not succeed, sorry for the lack of, examples, but I'm coming up without Austria again, because the kind of entrepreneurial power that he brings is not necessarily something that the people in Austria consider to be a good leader for politics. We had Frank Stronach, who's Canadian, who moved to Austria, very successful entrepreneur. And that was one of the reasons, not the only one, but there was a lot of skepticism that he would be even capable of doing that. So in the U.S.-American history, you have a very different relationship between what does the industry provide for the people, and how is it entangled with politics? I mean, it's quite fascinating to think about that in more detail when you look at that or similar issues. But the sort of understanding that this person still has a valid leadership because of that entrepreneurial background, it's very strong. So.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Kauai Soapbox with Marshall and Felicia, and then Masha
Gukanik.
Gukanik, it does not look like what it's spelled like. Are in the studio, and we're discussing a handful of issues and kind of shifting a little bit into community concerns and solution efforts. But before we go right into your research, I want to bring up lightly, partly because I don't want to speak about them without strong knowledge, two topics that are near the end of their public input windows. And these windows are seemingly very, very short. It's like the middle of October. And first I heard about one, which is kind of a lightweight one, which is no swimming with dolphins, with, you know, relatively strong consequences if you're caught swimming with dolphins. And there is dolphin harassment in some areas where tour companies are going out, and there's concern that, you know, these poor little animals never get a break. But that doesn't happen here on Kauai. And what we saw in the NOAA study, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration study, the last numbers that they were looking at was 1998, you know, and so they're saying that the population is on the decrease. How do they know it's on the decrease? You know, that's like 18 years ago. And, you know, many people that were at the hearing were saying, hey, you're allowing the military to have 12 million takes and basically play war games in there. And we're saying, you know, people can get in trouble if they're caught near a dolphin. And most people who have had experience in the ocean knows the dolphins sort of rule in the ocean. They know where to go, what to do. They're so fast and they swim so well that, you know, except for where these boats are consciously going and, you know, almost crowding the dolphins where they're sleeping. And it's not happening on this island. It was acknowledged, no, that is not happening on this island. You know, it's a mission creep when we're trying to put that in there.
So what's the consequence, or what would be the consequence under this proposal for someone who swims out into the bay and encounters dolphins?
Well, it's a crime. It's a felony and a fine. And, you know, I mean, you could have, you know, it could ruin your boat company for sure. We're going to take a call, and then we're going to talk for a moment about the Osprey helicopters and the Marine Corps, because we're also in that short window. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can.
You know, thank goodness KKCR airs Democracy Now.
Yes.
And that's the biggest reason why I support KKCR, because I can listen to most any music. Plus, you guys advertise current events, traffic problems, emergency services, et cetera, et cetera. And last night I heard
the candidate forum?
Yeah, the forum. And that's really, really neat that you guys can broadcast the forum so everybody who wants to listen can. Even though I could only stand listening for a few minutes, I had to turn off my radio, right? You know, but one of the things I heard on Democracy Now! That's just startling, but it's typical of the ruling class that are going to create their own sense of the moral high ground of making laws and how to apply them to the masses. In the Philippines, I don't know if you've heard this, whether you listen to Democracy Now! Like I do, you've probably heard this bit of news, that the president of the Philippines has killed in this last year over 3,000 drug dealers and drug users. Have you heard this little bit of news?
You know, I didn't see that particular episode of Democracy Now! I know that there has been some very harsh repercussions for drug use.
Well, yeah, it's not just drug dealers per se, and they don't mention it's users. So you naturally assume, I scratch my head and I go, well, and there's without a doubt marijuana is illegal in the Philippines. And it just makes common sense of this. And by the way, when the United States kind of questions this, you know, why are you doing this to the president? He tells the United States in terms to just shove off and mind their own business, with some explicatives, right? And oh, he's sick of the American influence in the Philippines, and they might go to China and Russia for support.
But
right?
That guy is just a loose cannon altogether. I don't think we can
who is at the top of the food chain as far as, you know, persecuting people for drugs? You know, we're right at the top just as much as anybody. And I was just feeling a little cynical, you know, because when they were interviewing the people that are trying to become the attorneys of the woman and the man, Collier, and the other lady, I forget her name.
Lisa Aaron and Justin Collier.
Yeah, they're vying. They spent, you know, their time, and they're trying to state their case of vote. Why should I vote for
right.
either one of them, right? You know, the issue which always comes up is, well, you know, for a prosecuting, besides crimes like, you know, murder, you know, armed robbery, which everybody knows is bad, and that you should go to jail if you commit these terrible crimes.
Crystal meth was what came up as I think they said.
Well, the thing was, I heard that, you know, the lady, you know, and who knows, you know, she goes, well, you know, according to the statutes for dealing methamphetamines, which everybody knows is bad, you know, you don't want to do that. That rotten stuff, it's bad for you. You know what I mean? You know, she goes, well, the statute says it's 20 years in prison. And that's what I think, that's what she thinks these criminals should, these methamphetamine traffickers, as she puts it, should go to jail for 20 years. And I'm just thinking to myself, not too long ago, I don't have a problem, first of all, because I'm an adult. There could be a million drug dealers lined up down the street, and they could be offering me drugs, and I go, oh, no, thank you. because I take responsibility for my own actions.
I think in that topic, she was saying that there, when people come out of jail or out of rehab and they have that problem.
I heard what she said. She goes, she made a statement like, well, when they're addicted to a drug like methamphetamine, you know, which I've never tried in my life, okay?
So caller, I have a guest here.
Well,
I was
let
about
me finish and I'll let you go. Give me 30 more seconds.
Okay, 30 more seconds.
What she said is she goes, well, when they're addicted and they go try to get some drugs from the drug dealer, the drug dealer's not their friend. That's exactly what she said,
yeah,
right?
Basically.
And I assume these are adults that should be responsible for their own welfare and should know better than, first of all, to get addicted in the first place, right? And plus, it's against the law, okay? You know, because in reference to the Philippines, I could be very cynical because not too many years ago, you know, marijuana for
right.
one seed of marijuana, you could go to jail for 20 years.
Right, and we're needing to change that. And caller,
Well, I'll just say one last thing, and thank you, Felicia, for your time. Because in the most cynical way, I could say, you know, hey, why stop at 20 years? Why not? Let's go the route of this Philippine president. Let's just capital punishment for all drug offenses, including like marijuana. You know what I mean? Because the war on drugs is like a dysfunctional, you know.
Yeah,
all that
and caller,
money.
That is like a whole show because you're bringing up such an important point, and we need to do a whole show on that because
it should go down to educating youth. You know,
it's a bigger issue than that. Even it's because a lot of youth are given Ritalin and Adderall and different things like that, which are amphetamines.
So pharmaceuticals
can be the gateway drug. But thank you so much for calling.
Well, I think people should eat more brown rice and whole grains.
Thank you, thank you so much for calling.
Okay,
thank you. Okay, I'm going to do the Osprey helicopter stuff later. Okay, so, do we have another call for just a moment? Okay, all right. Okay, this is going to be very quick.
Okay. Sorry, Felicia.
Okay.
Yes, we had a caller who just wanted to follow up on the last caller's comments about Democracy Now! Wanted to add to his positive take on that show and mention that during the presidential debate, Democracy Now! Actually went on to include Gary Johnson and Jill Stein.
That's right. Well, Gary Johnson didn't join by choice, but
okay.
I did watch the whole thing with Jill Stein, and today they are stretching, Democracy Now! Is stretching it to have Jill Stein's vice presidential candidate. Okay, Masha.
Yes.
I want to make sure that we are able to just talk a little bit about what your study was, because you were here and you did a really important study, and in regular people's work, because I know that you have a very strong vocabulary, make it simple.
Oh, yes.
Okay, but what was your study centered on?
Okay, so what I said before about ethnographic research, that's basically what I did at the time when I was here on Kauai. This was in 2012 and 13. And you mentioned Kanoi Kapono Public Charter School. And I wanted to pick up what you said about me helping them. It was not necessarily... that
you
was not my
school, though,
it was not necessarily that was not my approach. And in some ways, I offered a collaborative research project. I wanted to do more with film and visual media because I had done a smaller project for my master's in Honolulu a few years before. And I wanted to be more involved at the school. And it was sort of a dual role as being, on one hand, well, there were probably several roles, but I was on one hand a film class instructor for the high school students. And then I was also a researcher, an ethnographic researcher, trying to better understand what exactly the Hawaiian youth learn about their culture and what they learn about Malama Aina. And Hawaiian-focused charter schools are very young. They're about 15 years at this point. They're across the Hawaiian Islands. and there are four here on Kauai, and Kanaui Kapono is on the east side. And I always found it more interesting to work with youth. I didn't know it at the time, but I wanted to understand what they learn from in these new schools that oftentimes focus more on the kindergarten or the very young ages when they do Olelo Hawaii. And the idea that, you know, the younger you are, you know,
easier language yes. immersion happens.
Exactly.
Olelo Hawaii is
right.
language immersion mm-hmm. for the kids who
yeah.
the listeners who don't know that meaning.
Right. And so I wanted to know what it was like for the high school students. And what I found was that Kanaui Kapono has a motto, which is a school without walls. And I saw that, and I sort of contributed to that in a way of also going outside of the campus. So we went on field trips, we went interviewing tourists, and the students had their own projects. And we also went to community events. We went to the PLDC.
Public Land Development Corporation.
Right, this was at the time.
Resistance movement.
Right.
That succeeded, so the public lands did not get redirected or got pulled back from being redirected for exploitation for revenue back to conservation and preservation.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big difference. And those kids actually made an impact.
Yeah, I think, you know, a few years later now, thinking
yeah.
and talking about it, I realized that as well. So it was interesting to involve them and you know, the school also being interested in having them have their voices be heard. And then I sort of extended my research to also look at how education and how learning about the land and about food and food production, how land should be used for food, how that happened in other areas. I was also involved in with you and other folks at the Regenerations Botanical Garden and lots of other events that were promoting more kala farming. There was a lot of kala
yeah,
workshops at the time.
And we also worked at Waipa together.
Right, exactly. And the food forest started at the time, and then I started to expand it more and more. And I had I was working with a high school teacher at the time at Kanaui Kapono. She and the school were very open to like go to different places too. And the biotech company and the corporations, the agricultural biotechnology, those became increasingly public issues prior to the bill 2491. Introduction that was a couple of months later. So we went to Pioneer and we went to see sort of like hear different perspectives as well. And so I expanded to also look at how education looks like in the movement. How is it, how do people educate themselves on land issues? How do people educate themselves? How Kanaka Maoli Native Hawaiians educate themselves and learn about how to use the land, and also how the biotech corporations use the term and the practice of education. So educating the public meant something very different to educating yourself or the public in the movement, and education means something very different in the Hawaiian charter school. And so what I did in my research is to sort of disentangle all of this a little bit more, to really pause and say, okay, when we talk about getting educated and wanting to educate the public, or where do you get your education? Do you get it in institutional settings? Do you go to university? Do you learn it from your kupuna? Do you learn it from fishing? Do you learn it from your friends or family? So these are all very wide areas of learning. And as a consequence, you have also, some people might not agree with me on that, but I would argue that you have very different forms of expertise that come out of that. And I think this is one of the struggles, especially for Kanaka Maoli, in the school system, to have teachers that can teach and want to teach certain things, like how to fish, how to grow food, how to their chants and their hula and their epistemologies, how to know, how do we know what we know, right? And so this is in. To sort of wrap it up, is my broader thesis, I guess, is to say that there is not really this sort of objective truth that only educated people get in educated institutions, or scientists knowing everything about biotechnology, or, you know, DOE authorities knowing
Department
about
of Education,
right,
yes,
about how to educate in Hawaii in the 21st century. So so it's really also like trying to, you know, looking at how that has democratized what it is considered to be educated, what it is considered to be you know, an expert in certain areas.
Well, you had asked me to come up there because the kids were asking about the Public Land Development Corporation, and I went in, and I want to say that it was interesting because I walked in at a time when the teacher was teaching some of the core curriculum that came out of the standards, and the kids were kind of restless and all moving around, and I was, you know, just observing and you know, prepped for maybe a less than respectful reaction, though totally happy to meet them wherever they were at. Mm-hmm. But I was so pleased to see how capable and how powerful they became when there was a topic that they cared about. And they had basically asked you to ask somebody to come in that knew a little bit more about the Public Land Development Corporation because they already had that concern. You didn't foster that concern. I didn't foster that concern. And they were empowered. And they had, I was really impressed with the music and their ability to be doing things. And I think that what I observed as they were going and having exposure to even, you know, I applaud you for taking them on the field trip so they could see, well, let's hear it from the people who are actually doing this, and they weren't sold, you know. So that empowerment was coming from them. You know, it wasn't you directing it. They were...
Yeah,
I mean, did some good things, but I mean,
this is a really crucial point that you highlight, because and I'm gonna say in a minute why I say this. You know, as a researcher, you're not just as an ethnographic researcher. You understand that when you do participant observation, you're very involved. When you do some sort of collaborative research, you're not just a fly on the wall and observing people from the distance and seeing, oh, what is this kind of culture looks like and what is that school doing? You know, I'm not involved. I'm, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm just like this invisible observant. No, it's actually quite the opposite. It is actually acknowledging that you come with a particular interest. The notion of objectivity that is very strong in our everyday life understanding of, like, you know, we need to look at the facts, we need to look at these.
Yeah, objectivity could be interpreted as not having an attachment to one side or the other.
So, you know, to acknowledge that this is something that we have grown up and in our, I guess, in Western thought and going back at least into the Enlightenment, to really find a separation from the mysticism, from the church, from anything that could be distorted from a scientific understanding of the world. And when I approached Kanoi Kopono, they knew that I was interested in Kalo. They knew that I was interested in the biotech industry at the time. I was following the GMO Kalo thing at the time on Oahu more so than here. And I was interested in, I was, you know, surprised somewhat when I came to Kauai in 2008 that the same concern that was around GMO Kalo was not the same that was that people had about the industry that was here on Kauai at the time already. So I came with some interests, but I also knew that I am not going to sort of put that
implant that.
Yes. And when these issues came up in the school, so when I talked to people and, you know, I went back to my notes and I was actually looking like, oh, when did these issues actually come up? But I, because I had sort of, you know, after some time you do forget certain things, but I realized that that was actually already there. And so I'm almost reluctant to mention it, but I do want to make that statement on the radio as well, because it is an important one that fits into this topic. Some people might know Joan Conroe, the journalist who's written.
Uh-huh. Did she say something harsh to you?
Well, she has dismissed. I actually had the opportunity to talk to her during my time when I was here, and I interviewed her as well, and we had a very good conversations at the time. And about a year later, she would dismiss my work and say it was not objective, it was not sort of independent enough, and I was just rolling with the movement. And a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, she was writing a post on a website of an exhibition that's part of my research, and bringing up these issues, which I think are very important issues, and I really think that that conversation is very important. Like, who do we claim to know and be an expert and be objective? And I wish she would choose this arena to have that conversation and not writing to me messages or writing on or posting things. If we don't have the conversation in that way, I think it's actually a big loss, because I understand that she has a different perspective as to what a research should be.
But
you should not be involved.
I will say, don't take it too personally.
No, because that's not why I'm saying this. I'm really saying this because I think that this conversation is very important, and she's not really giving me the choice to have that conversation.
Right.
With her.
And I'm saying, you know, you are in good company, and she's an intelligent person, but best I can tell, she is part of the Cornell team, and so it's kind of a little bit of a job of hers,
right,
to give you, me, a number of other people a very hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And so think of it as getting a Grammy. It means you're effective. And so when she's, you know, pulling you apart, and she can pull you apart in an intelligent way, but it doesn't make it right. And I appreciate what you were just saying, and it's more valuable to be having an open conversation. Like in the next hour, we are going to have this discussion on water diversions, and then I'm really happy that the head of the water department, Kirk Psyche, is going to be a part of it. That's how to have a mature mm-hmm. conversation, is people say, I have this concern and this viewpoint, and it is countered with, well, these are my concerns and viewpoint, and typically, there is some middle ground on there, you know, that it's maybe not all in one direction mm-hmm. or another. And I agree that that is a way to be speaking. I want to make sure that I'm able to say something to you that I think is meaningful relative to looking at the charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were back in Canada before the stuff came up with the Mauna Kea movement and
right.
the 30-meter telescope. And I went over there to... I spent a few days over there, and I could not believe how wonderful and loving and aloha it was. But you could see the impact of these yes. immersion charter schools mm-hmm. because normally you go to these type of events, and it is the vast majority are newcomers.
Mm-hmm.
This, the overwhelming majority, was people of Kanaka Maoli or Hawaiian
mm-hmm.
descent.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hawaiian language was being spoken fluently and
mm-hmm.
fully, and it was across the generations, and it was like a living school
mm-hmm.
up there.
Mm-hmm.
And the activists were lawyers and teachers and kind and empowered, and I think that we're seeing that like happening over at Standing Rock
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
people standing in courage. And it's not so much about the telescope or the pipeline, the oil line. It's that somewhere we have to have these breaking points where people
yeah.
say, no, we can't keep going. And maybe the people, we all use gas. Most everybody is so enthralled with the stars. It's not that the people who work for those companies are horrible. It's not the people who work for the seed industry are horrible. It's like, where do we begin to look at a different direction? How do we turn the ship around? How do we take the best of what's there on either side of the argument, but go in a life-affirming direction?
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw with the movement that is very much the effect of these charter schools
right.
is empowered young people, and they went into the Office of Hawaiian Affairs and the young ones that just really powered through it and powered through in the courts and are forcing the language to be recognized. And so it is, it's not preserving history or looking at what history is. It's the present, and it's perpetuating our host culture that we are learning more and more that we've been disinformationed, that's not really a word, but given disinformation, that this was like a less than competent group of simple people where, you know, people kind of knew that it was different, but this Renaissance and then the internet and then these research that's coming out of the University of Hawaii is so powerful, looking at the core documents, knowing, hey, no, this has been wrong information. And this was an incredible group of people who are reclaiming that quality, and yay.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. I think even within the last decade, I was fortunate to come to Hawaii and observe it and be part of it. It's been really amazing and exciting to see how these Hawaiian-focused charter schools have grown, and through many, many struggles and many transitions and lack of land and lack of infrastructure, just persevere. And I think that is, that in itself is a big, big quality that the students took. I mean, they, that was one of the things that the students took, shared with me as well, is that, you know, it's not just about learning how to write and read. It's really learning about how to be
empowered,
competent to deal with change, with constant change, like on a daily basis, right? And there, you're right. Like there's a lot of really, really fascinating work coming out. It's exciting for me to see how much happens at the University of Hawaii. I did my PhD at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, and one of the reasons why I wanted to go there was because they have a very strong focus on Indigenous issues and First Nation studies, and there is a very big awareness of how do we bring these different ways of knowing, these epistemologies, together in a dialogue.
What is epistemology?
So epistemology, if you take it apart, basically means the way, how do we know what we know?
Okay.
So basically, you cannot say or claim that there is this universal truth out there. We all have particular ways in our historical upbringing, you know, in our society, in the history, in our personal upbringing, social, cultural, political.
And when we talk about First Nations issues, we are talking about, in many ways, how do we merge the knowledge and the strengths of what was a part of the past, and the, like in Hawaii, this is the most isolated place of land on the planet, and so they were able to sustainably live in a resilient way, you know, and so we're using these words, but meaning they didn't need something from somewhere else. There was a time when they were going all over the ocean, but in the last few hundred years prior to Western contact, they mostly were living right here. It was less of their voyaging time, and they succeeded, and they thrived. Almost as many people then as now, and the place got healthier, not less, from when they're there. So we're looking at that, and then how does that merge with Western values? And this next topic that we're going to be addressing with the water, it very much overlaps that, because it's kalo farmers and downstream water, and we've seen big issues with that on the island of Maui, trying to get their water rights back. And, you know, who is more important and what is more important, and how do we make it work? So in the next half hour, I mean, the next hour, we're going to be hearing from Adam Asquith and Debbie Jackson. But at the top of the hour, I want to say KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And Masha
Kukunik.
If it looked like it, I could say it, you know. And then we're going to be having Adam and Debbie come in, and then I'm expecting Kirk Psyche from the Department of Water to be calling in the second half hour of that, so we can work on solutions. And this program, Kauai Soapbox, is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Oh my gosh, what do I have here? Kauai Store. And actually, I don't think I have that right. The Copper Man. You know, I want to just thank our underwriters because they make this show possible. Our underwriters. So this time it is the Copper Man.
KKCR's fall membership drive starts on October 17th. From now until the start of our drive, we encourage you to participate in our early bird drive. All early bird contributors will be entered into our early bird drawing for a chance to win a brand new iPad mini. Our goal for the drive is $55,000. Help us get there by making a sustaining or one-time donation today. Visit kkcr.org or call 826-7774.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And so we have Adam Asquith in here.
Aloha.
And Debbie Jackson.
Aloha.
And they're both going to be helping me parse out this new aspect of the water. Debbie, why don't you tell them really quickly what your role is and why you care about this issue?
Well, my husband and I live on Kuleana family land in Hulia.
Kuleana means land that's gone through the generations?
Ours has.
Yeah. And you happen to be Hawaiian. Debbie Jackson doesn't sound it, but... it's evident. Okay.
Well, we're homesteading. We're growing food and raising animals and teaching our mo'opuna, our grandkids. So I started Hui Ho'opulapula Nawai Opuna with other people like me, with Kuleana landowners, taro farmers, cultural practitioners. And we're concerned about and are demanding the return of Puna waters. We want to see a balance of Puna water.
Puna is the moku, or the district of the island of Kauai that is basically Lihue, Hanamaulu, down to...
Anahola.
Anahola. I mean, all the way up to Anahola, mm-hmm. And is it as... it's not as far as Kipukai or Koloa, right? It's Puhi, maybe, is the bottom end.
Hulia, actually, in the mm-hmm. Haupu Mountain Range.
Okay, Hulia, that water will end up in now Willy Willy Harbor near where the airport and the ports are. Okay, and Adam, do you want to share a little bit of your background and your interest? Did you finish it, Debbie? Yeah, okay. Adam?
I'm a taro farmer, but in addition to that, and for most of my kind of professional career, I've worked on conservation issues, including for the University of Hawaii Sea Grant College Program, And Debbie got started several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when the water department had the proposal to drill into the site of Waialeale. They asked for my assistance in understanding the water resources and so forth. And so I helped them do that, and we were able to garner the support of Office of Hawaiian Affairs and Kapua Sproat from the
Law School.
And brought a lot of resources to Kauai to understand this issue and move forward on restoring that balance. We had public workshops. We had workshops with the county council. We had workshops with the mayor. We had workshops with the Department of Water. We had workshops at the community college. Debbie was asked and currently still sits on the Citizens Advisory Board for the Water Use and Development Plan update. We've been engaged with the players on this issue for years.
Yes, I went to a pretty compelling presentation at the Niamalu Canoe Clubhouse, and I've gone to a handful of the Water Department meetings. And I've also seen the presentation before the county council. So the concerns that you all are raising have been put out for quite some time. So if I could say it succinctly, and then please correct me, because this is just my observance of what I remember, is that as the surface water is redirected from its natural flow, it both hurts the aquifers, but then as the stream flow is less, it's basically dried out different portions of the island, and that in earlier times when the Hawaiian community was much stronger, actually it was part of the die-off. Because is that correct? Because as the water was diverted, it wrecked the villages and what was going on underneath. It was part of the, it was problematic to a profound level, and most of that happened in the time of sugar.
That's right, and the water is very complicated in the Puna district. That's been demonstrated scientifically.
Tell us why it's complicated, and it's important because that's the biggest population center. Is that correct too? I know Kapaa is pretty big.
Not only is it the biggest population center, but we've gone through years of planning, right, to focus all future development in the Lihui Hanamaʻulu Puhi area.
So
we have put all our eggs in this basket, right? And as it turns out, we don't have the water resources to support that growth in that area.
Because we thought there was a big lens under the island, the same way as on Oahu. And the island is more like a piece of pumice. We could look at it as a Slurpee, and we put a straw in and we suck it, and it pulls the water from somewhere else. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right. And what it pulls the water from are the streams. And so our wells pull water from the streams, and then since we were running out of the water, they said, well, we'll just go take the water directly out of the streams further up. And so and obviously that's an issue because other things and people and life depend upon those waters in the streams. So we're in a conundrum. This is a huge issue, and the community has been asking the county to embrace it. Embrace the problem, right?
What does embrace mean? To talk about it?
To admit that we have a problem. Like, so, you know, if you have a drug or alcohol problem, you can't solve it until you first admit you have a problem.
Okay, so we're in the first step.
We're in the first step of whatever those...
So
however
I can
many
say,
that's right.
I'm Felicia Cowden, and I have a water issue because I spend too much time in the shower.
Yes. So we have a water issue, right? And we've known that for over a decade now. And so, but we've never, we seem to be afraid to publicly admit it and publicly admit what we've done just to keep the toilets flushing and the faucets going, right? And so, and thank God to those people who have done that for us, okay? Nonetheless, there are rules and laws that we are required to follow when it comes to water. And so one of the big things that Kapua and her students helped us understand as a community.
Law professor. Specializing in water.
Yep. One of the big things that they brought our attention to and helped us understand is this issue of the public trust doctrine and how the state and all its political subdivisions are trustees and are required to protect and uphold the public trust. And there are many things that fall under the public trust, but water is the big one.
So when we are looking at that, again, I'm just going to give a little bit of superficial history. Right now, water comes from Waialae, which is really in the Ko'olau district. That's in the
Waialae is in the Puna district.
Is it really?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, all right. So yep. It's coming over. They're redirecting.
They take water, and they take the. And this is really important to understand. They take water that comes off Waialae, Kawaikini, and Kahili. And it is the same water, the exact same water that they had proposed to tap with the horizontal well.
They were going to put a well in. They were going to put a horizontal pipe in so that the pressure of the water would actually suck the... wouldn't need power to make it happen. It would be above the contaminated wells that are in the area now because we have residual problems that are on there. Do we have Kirk on? No. Okay. All right. Okay. Is this somebody right on this? Okay. Hello.
How are you doing?
Are you an expert on this? Otherwise, I'm going to want you to hold. Who's this?
No. I'm just... calling as a, I'm not the guest expert. I was just calling to say there's going to be hundreds of people going to destroy all their water diversions and restore the natural flow, whether or not hundreds of people want it or not. Now you guys can get back to your expert or whatever.
Oh, okay. All right. So let me just get that right. There are people who are very upset.
There are people on this island that are not going to let this diversion because of people and big business and everything and all the county council and all that. Just, they're not going to wait for that. If the river doesn't start flowing soon, people are going to go destroy the diversions. Local people that have culture, that want to do their natural Hawaiian, you know.
To correct the stream flow.
Yeah, it's just going to happen. I mean, they have all, now the rivers are not flowing at all.
Okay, thank you for that important piece. I appreciate that. Aloha. So, that piece of history, some of that water, because I've gone up there, and it's when you're north of the diversion, Mauka of the diversion, more towards the mountain, there is about an 18-inch thick carpet of moss, and, you know, the ground is just like sponge. It seems like a magical place right out of Lord of the Rings or something like that, the Shire.
Yep.
Then there's the diversion, great fun to sit on an inner tube and go through the diversion to the other side, good rope swing, etc. But you, on the other side of it, a lot of times, 100% of that water goes through. So there is a dry stream bed on the downstream side. So all that water goes over, and then that 18-inch thick carpet of green stuff, living matter, is dirt on the other side. So even if that water in heavy rainfall does go straight for a little while, that whole biological system has been removed, and so the difference is profound. To the left, it's visible. To the right, it's not visible.
And so people need to understand that and other diversions, it's not just the North Fork. We take the
North Fork of the Waialua River.
They're taking water from a whole series of streams that come off the face of the mountain. That is where our drinking water is coming from for Lihue, and that is where all the drinking water is proposed to come from for all future growth in Lihue.
So right now they're building supposedly affordable housing, or some of it's affordable housing in Hanama'ulu. So you see that big construction area. So that would be getting some of this water.
Yeah. So for anyone, it's absurd for anyone to go up there and see the difference in life above and below a 100% diverted stream. Is just ludicrous, and claim that there's no impact.
Well, the impact is striking.
It,
It's striking.
Yes.
So, but so we, there's no question that there is a biological difference on one side and the other. And I'm assuming that the argument could be is, all right, well, people have to live somewhere. And we just got a new senior housing in. So, because we do shows in here where it's about homelessness and seniors and everybody's drinking the water.
Yeah. So let's be clear. This is not. There are issues on Kauai like the dairy in Mahaulipu where there's a lot of people that think that's a bad project and that project should not go forward. This project is not like that. Of course, the schools and homes and hospitals that they need water and they will get the water. The problem is the fish and the Hawaiians and the taro patches downstream right now do not get the water. And under
right.
our current under the current plan, they will never get the water. So this is about a balance. And that balance is exactly what the public trust constitutional doctrine demands.
And so there was, if I am correct, a finding of no significant impact if they put this 18-inch pipe to divert the water. Now, I tried to read up on it, and I am hoping that Kirk Psyche from the Department of Water calls in. I've asked him to call in around 5:30 because I don't have enough knowledge to give the balance. But so when I read what they had to say, it's like they're going, well, this water's all being moved anyway, and this is just a different pipe. Is that correct?
That's right. So this is, and that's this is really, really important because one of the Kauai, Kaulana Kauinoa, for the public trust doctrine, because a few years ago, there was a famous case called Kauai Springs.
Yeah.
And what we have before us now is what I'm calling Kauai Springs negative two, okay? And it's because we have the same players, many of the same players, arguing the same thing, but they've changed seats. In Kauai Springs, we had a water coming from a source on Knudsen property.
Yeah.
It was being transmitted through a pipeline owned by Grove Farm. Grove Farm then sold the water to a private developer to bottle the water. Okay?
Yeah, about a van a day
about,
of water.
Okay.
So the cul-de-sac worth of using water, but yes.
So then that person at the end, Kauai Springs, just needed asked for a zoning permit. And the planning commission and the planning department said, no, you can't have a zoning permit until you demonstrate to us that the source that you're not impacting the public trust resource of the water at its source. And Kauai Springs logically goes, are you kidding me?
I went to their place and looked at it.
But their argument was this. Hey, we're just buying the water from Grove Farm. How can you demand of us to go to a third party and demonstrate that they're not impacting the stream? All we're doing is buying the water. All we're asking for is a zoning permit. And
went to the Supreme Court, right?
Okay, well, the planning department said, gosh, but you're the one asking for the permit. Grove Farm isn't asking for the permit. So the burden falls on the applicant for the permit.
Okay.
And it went to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, yep, exactly right. It's
they
whoever,
lost their house and everything.
Yep. And so this is a huge, huge issue. And so now we have a very similar situation. Source of the water is on state or Grove Farm lands. Grove Farm delivers the water to the county, sells it to the county. The county then delivers it to a variety of commercial interests, Coast Guard station, hotels, all sorts of businesses in Lihue. All of a sudden, Kirk Psyche and the water department have to ask for a permit just to dig a ditch and put in a pipeline. And their argument is, wait a minute, we're not diverting the water. Grove Farm is. All we're trying to do is put in a pipeline. Guess what? The Supreme Court already ruled. It is unfortunate, but you're the one asking for the permit. If you ask for the permit, you have to demonstrate, you bear the burden of proof that wherever that water is coming from is not impacting trust resources. This has already been determined.
Okay, so if they put this pipe in, is more water going to be taken? I just want to know that.
It's very clear that the purpose, and that's stated in the EA, the purpose of this
environmental
assessment. Yeah, sorry. Yes. The purpose of the pipeline is to transmit additional water, surface water, to growth.
And Debbie looks like she wants to say something.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay. Yeah. And then when I look at that, this is something that, like, because I actually, I had, I think his name was, oh my gosh, Merrick. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He disappeared in like a week. The person who was the head of the Department of Water.
Craddock. Yep.
Pretty nice guy. I mean, when you accept that it is going right at the spiritual heart of the island, you know, if you weren't thinking about that, it was a pretty good plan because it saved the county about $12 million a year. Some of that went to the power company, and basically the county's been buying the surface water from Grove Farm.
It's worse than that. We pay, as ratepayers through KIUC, we pay $300,000 a year to maintain the ditch line going through Grove Farm property to deliver the water to Grove Farm, who then turns around and sells it back to us. So we pay to get it there, and we pay to get it out.
Right. So one could say you're paying for the service, just like with Kauai Springs could say they are just delivering the water. And I have to just give a full disclosure. When I went and looked at the Kauai Springs thing, I went, well, it's actually environmentally a pretty sound thing. That water was running anyway, and they're just, when people have bottled waters in their companies or wherever they have get it from someplace other island, why not get it from here?
I agree, Felicia. Compared to what we're looking at here, Kauai Springs was really, really minor impact. And they were, they had a valid argument. Why are you holding us to this burden?
You destroyed their lives and they're nice people.
Yeah. So if the county is going to hold them to that standard, then they better turn around and hold themselves to the same standard.
All right. That's a good point. So when
you're saying... In fact, it's not a point. That is what the Supreme Court says.
Okay, so thank you. So I'm just trying to grasp it.
The Hawaii Supreme Court?
Yes,
Supreme Court. So just trying to grasp it. The complaint is, aside from the fact that water is being taken, is that this hasn't had an environmental impact statement or a public hearing process and a permit? Is that the core complaint that you're making, that they have not gone to get through the public process necessary for a permit? Is that correct?
Well, it's beyond that.
Okay,
right?
Help me.
If this was an independent body, right, then the burden would be on the OEQ, say, Office of Environmental Quality Control, to protect the public trust.
And Gary Hoosier used to be on.
So the burden would be on them to make sure that the permit was not issued, that they didn't get their FONSI until they addressed this stuff.
Freedom of... FONSI stands for...
Finding of No Significant Impact. So they would... So that office would need to make sure that they didn't grant them a FONSI and force them to go through the full EIS...
Environmental impacts, which would
force them to make sure that the public trust resources were protected. Now, but we back up because the Department of Water, as an extension of the county, is a subdivision of the state. So they are a trustee in and of themselves. They bear the duty, the affirmative duty, of protecting that resource itself. For anybody in the water department to walk up to any one of those diversions and go, this looks pretty good, we'll take 100% of the water, that is a violation of their duty as trustees of public trust.
Okay, that's pretty clear to me.
Yep.
And then, when I try and zoom the camera back and go, okay, well, what's the big picture problem? The big picture problem is that we don't understand our water resources under
the
island.
Yeah.
And I did go to that study that came over. I forget. I went to the Commission on Water Resource Management, but there was another one that came around to the different groups. Do you remember what that was called?
It's the Water Use and Development Plan.
Okay, the Water Use and Development Plan that almost nobody showed up for. And there was almost no resistance, but what did get revealed in that is that their baseline information was wrong. And they knew that, and they were like, well, okay, we have to keep working, and hopefully we will correct that by the time that we get there. But when I think about that giant icy with the straws in it sucking the juice out, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. I read a book called Sugar Water by Carol Wilcox. Have you ever read that book?
Yep.
So that is a history of 100 years or 150 years of these water diversions and what happened. And I still feel like I'm pretty novice in grasping what's going on, but I'm just trying to look at both sides of it. So when these guys are taking the water, they're saying, okay, well, we're going to create this housing, and we're going to create this senior stuff, and we're going to create this development that everybody says that we need. But in the consequences of that is that we're going to dry up another area that needs that water, probably be drying up even Niamalu and Hulia'a, right, which is the areas that where you guys live and farm.
It's not exactly that, Felicia.
Okay.
That was true with sugar, right?
Okay.
And this is the problem, right? Is that we have this is a false dilemma. This is not Solomon's decision, right? It's either kupuna housing in Lihue or fish in the stream.
Okay,
right?
That's helpful for me.
Yeah, it's not
okay.
There's plenty of water.
Okay.
Right? The problem is, they take all of it. They take all of it for, you know, just to go to a small housing development. So the issue is that if they must demonstrate the need, how much water do we need, and the rest remains in the stream. That's the law. That's the law.
So I went up to the pump house in Kekaha in Waiava Valley.
Yep.
Oh, a lot of water coming over there.
A lot of water.
And yep. Then when I look at Waimea, there's not much water left in that river.
Nope.
And so when we did the Commission on Water Resource Management there, there's been a really heavy redirect of that asset, too. And that water basically, in the end, ends up in the ocean somewhere else.
That's exactly right.
So is this water that's coming away from Wailua, is in the end, it's just ending up in the ocean somewhere else, too?
Well, that you got to
get used all up.
Yeah, you got to scratch your head, and Kirk Psyche can probably explain, you know, really like how much water is actually being used by the Lihue development versus we know it's like, you know, 20, 30 million gallons is being taken out of the streams, right? You're right. Where is it all going?
Yeah.
We don't use that much water.
Recently, I flew in and out of Phoenix on my way to Philadelphia, and the Salt River there is so consumed that they've built across the riverbed. It's crazy to look at that from the sky because if for some reason they didn't use all that water, that's all going to flood away.
You know what I tell people? That one of the fun ways to understand what's going on is to go watch that great film Chinatown with Jack Nicholson. It was an Academy Award. It is about the development of the Los Angeles Basin, and it's all about selling ag land and capturing water because LA is a desert, and if they didn't have the water, they couldn't develop. And that is exactly what is happening in Lihue. You can't, the last permit you need, it doesn't matter what the county zones or what the state zones, the last permit you need to build is what?
Is water.
Is
and
water.
That's why we don't have a laundromat north
that's
of Kapaa.
That's right. So he who controls the water controls development.
Yeah. And then, so this water goes over to Grove Farm. This is a private entity, and they're making quite a bit of money.
Yep.
And I'm not picking on Aqua Engineers, but they're really the ones managing that, right?
Yep.
And we're all pooping, so we're all having part of that problem, but Aqua Engineers is the one that put the human manure, the solid waste, in an area that is implicated in problems. I mean, this is, when we look at how the Hawaiians pooped also, just like we did, so somehow they had a system that worked because there was as many of them as there was us. There was more. So I'm not quite sure what they did.
It's concentration, right? The solution for pollution is dilution. So when you can have when you spread,
I write that down.
When you say
that again, the
solution to pollution is dilution. So when you take 100,000 people and spread them all over the island, all down Nepali coast, all up in Kokei, you know that pollution, right? That human generated pollution is spread out all over the place, and the environment can handle it. If you concentrate everybody in Lihue, which is our plan, the systems will fail. That's just a given.
So I am hearing from you that one of the farmer plantations, Grove Farm, who is also a developer, they control our water. Is that? Am I hearing that? I know that they're paid to manage the water, but do they get to control the outflow of where that goes? They get to say.
It's they have the biggest stick.
They have
that is here. These are the words that were told to us by a commissioner on the State Commission on Water Resource Management, is that Kauai is the Wild West. And until the sheriff comes to town, the guy with the biggest stick does whatever he wants to do.
Okay.
That is, we're in the Wild West right now.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and Debbie Jackson and Adam Asquith are in here helping me discuss the water diversion pipe that's going along one of the Cane Hall roads in, is that?
Kapaya.
So, and that's where this new landfill is going in. And Kirk, Psyche, and Water Department, Kim, and if you're hearing me, please call in at 826-7771 because I would like to have your help.
And I think the frustration that Debbie and other people had is that she has gone to extraordinary lengths to bring resources to the island, right? We brought over the USGS. Right?
The United States Geological
Survey. To help educate the public into this issue. And this has been going on for years. So for her to have to receive a call from somebody and go, oh, did you happen to read the OEQC bulletin out of Honolulu? Water Department is going to build an 18-inch main. They didn't bother calling her.
And Debbie, for just a brief moment, can you tell us what the impacts are as you see them on your farm? I mean, do you have enough water? Do you have Loikalo, right? You got to say yes because I can't see you're nodding. Okay. All right. She's sad right now. I'm sorry. This is emotional, so we love you. All right. So I will pull that away from you right now. Okay.
I can say something.
Okay.
So we farm right along the Hulia River, and I know that in the plantation days, the water is diverted from the Hulia River, and so the flow, there's not enough flow. The water comes down and is diverted to 100% of it. There's a dam, 100% of it goes through the mountain and into Waitā Reservoir. So the water that we're getting is from springs and I really don't know what else. Probably water that's being dumped from other places, from the other diversions. But what I know is I don't have enough water for my kalo.
Okay. We're going to take a quick call because, okay. Aloha, you're on the air. And so I'm going to keep you quick in case I get my water department calling in.
Okay, my question was, as I know that they closed a lot of the reservoirs down after the dam burst,
Koloko
dam break, and what are they going to do with those reservoirs? I know we need to hold water on the land so it can percolate through the soil and whatever. And did they sell all those reservoir lands off, or is there a plan to redo them?
Okay, that's a great question. I have some answers, but Adam probably has more. Thank you, caller, and we'll take this off air. Okay.
Yeah, most of the reservoirs are on private lands, and they've become an enormous liability for the new landowners, and that's why they're being decommissioned. Only those that have that the landowner can see great economic benefit will they invest in addressing the liability issues. There are a few on state lands, the Wailua Reservoir, above the ag station off Kuamo'o Road is a state-owned reservoir, and a lot of our tax dollars have gone into upgrading and improving that reservoir.
Yeah, and what I've seen in our own areas, like I live in the Ko'olau district, and then and in the Punamoku, a lot of these have gone into CPR lots, and so there's four or five different landowners that have maybe small farms or something, but none of them are Hanawai men. They don't have that history of understanding how to manage the awai, the canals, and the ditch systems. They don't know how to do it, and maybe they just have, little dinghy or kayak or something they put on the water, and so there's nobody responsible enough to handle it. So that's been an issue. But another big issue is that people who used to rely on the ditch system that are now using potable water to irrigate their orchards and their fields, so that's a little bit problematic.
Yep.
Problematic also. So when I look at, I don't want to pick on a certain council member, but we even have like a council member who is a land manager for Grow Farm. So I'm sure he must have to recuse himself when he's, do you know anything about that? Like when he's working on water issues and pieces like that?
I don't. I mean, you know, Grow Farm is embedded in this project. They're putting up some of the money. It's on their property.
Right. Well, I would expect that, but...
Yeah, it is, you know, we are inextricably linked in the Lihue area. But because it's a county project and there's county and state money, they must follow law. And the applicable law in this case is the public trust doctrine. So all we're asking is that they follow the law and that they be internally consistent with what they have held other community members to. If you're going to hold Kauai Spring to one standard, then by God, hold ourselves to the same standard. Don't hide behind Grow Farm when you told Kauai Springs, you bear the burden.
So if somebody was concerned about this, obviously you guys are very concerned about it. Maybe a number of the listeners are concerned about it. I'm hoping that we do hear from the water department in a moment here. Something probably got in the way of them being able to call in. Talking about it on the radio, I did speak with Kirk yesterday, and he seemed to be really open to doing that. What can people do?
There's the open comment period for this EA and anticipated finding of no significant impact. And so it is that time period. They have put the kahea out for public comment.
Kahea means the request for help.
Request for information. It's a call for, hey, what do you think about this?
Yeah, or kahea, like,
kahea,
means, hey.
Hey, what do you think about this project?
Right?
So this is not just Debbie, you know, raising a stink. This is the process, right? So they're asking for people's input. So, and you can send comments to Office of Environmental Quality Control. You can send it directly to the Water Department. You can send it to their paid consultant, which is Kodani Associates and Engineering.
Mm-hmm.
So you could send it to all those people. You could also send it to the state and all its political subdivisions, because all those people are trustees and have the duty to protect the public, the resources.
So I'm just trying to be helpful to the people who are less policy astute as you. Political subdivisions mean the county. Is a political
county and any agencies under either both the state and the county.
So one could go council members at Kauai.gov.
Yep.
They could do Office of Environmental Quality Control, which would be OECQC, Office of Environmental and Quality Control, OECQC, at DOH, which is Department of Health, .hawaii.gov. They could do County of Kauai Department of Water, and I think what I'll need to do is I will post this right on the KKCR page on Facebook so that people can see this. Now, I where I'm seeing it, it says Kauai Island Kokua, and this is a little bit of an alarmist statement. It's a call to action on this statement saying this is a problem, and I don't want to necessarily be endorsing everything that's said in this statement because I don't know for sure the facts of it to be true. It sounds like you guys do. I don't know who wrote this, but I am going to share it on the KKCR page of Facebook so people could find it, and because it's got some of those email addresses.
Yeah, and again, this is It's really sad that we've got to this point, because we should be proud of the county's behavior in defending the public resources in the Kauai Springs case. We did a great job, and the Supreme Court supported us. Then for us to turn around and argue and try to hide behind the argument that the plaintiff was making is just ludicrous. We went all the way to the Supreme Court to support our position, and for us to turn around and argue the opposite is ridiculous.
And so when you're saying us and our, that is the local government.
It's you and me, Felicia.
Right.
They're representing us. And so when I go up to that diversion, I'm complicit, because I'm letting them do that.
Right.
And the same way with the water department cannot say, oh, we don't take the Waters Grove Farm. You're complicit. You are part of the problem. You're supporting it. You're taking Grove Farm's money to do it.
Right. Yes. And also, I can't help but notice Grove Farm is in a really lucky position to be getting paid to be managing all this money, right? I mean, all this water. They're getting the water, and they're managing it.
I mean, management is that's a stretch of the definition of what's happening.
Well, they're cleaning the water and then they're redistributing it.
So here's what the Constitution and the law says, right? Is that sugar's done, right? And so at one time they did whatever they needed to take the water that sugar needed, okay? But we don't need the water anymore. So all that water goes back in the stream. If you have new uses, now all of a sudden we want to focus development in Lihue and we need a certain amount of drinking water. Go back to the state. Go, hey, state, we need a little bit of water to serve Kupuna housing and new homes. Okay, take what you need, but leave the rest in the stream for the fish and Hawaiians and kala practitioners. That's all the law is asking.
And that's important. It looks like we have a call, Marshall. Okay. So if other people, it sounds like the water department isn't calling, and that's who I've been trying to hold the line free for. If anybody else would like to call in and share their mana'o on their opinion on and their knowledge on either how it impacts them if they are in portions of the dried up area, or if they are benefiting from this water in a meaningful way.
So if I can just
826-7771.
If I can read an excerpt from the Supreme Court's ruling on the Kauai Springs case. Permit applicants, in this case that would be the water department, permit applicants must demonstrate their actual needs and, within the constraints of available knowledge, the propriety of draining water from public streams to satisfy those needs. If there is a reasonable allegation of harm to one of the uses protected by the public trust, and that's what Debbie is saying, there's no water in the stream, no fish, then the applicant must demonstrate that there is no harm in fact, or that any potential harm does not preclude a finding that the requested use is nevertheless reasonable. So they bear the burden.
Yes. And we have a caller holding. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I have a question. Has there ever been a comprehensive or even a guesstimation of the overall recoverable water resource and how much is needed for development in residential versus for healthy streams and agriculture and things like that? And also, and then what is the difference in the amount of water now compared to the pre-white man visit period? So that is my
okay.
Question.
Thank you.
I'm going to just address the first question. The second one is we don't really know, and it's quite complicated. But what the law says is that before you take water out of the streams, you must demonstrate that there's no reasonable alternative, okay? And so the reasonable alternative on most islands is to drill a well. So, and if you, as we saw in those meetings in the Water Use and Development Plan, the state says there's plenty of groundwater in Lihue. So,
but we don't know if that's true.
We don't, but the county must first demonstrate that they cannot get the groundwater before they can go to the stream.
Okay.
That is what the law says.
Okay.
So in answer to this gentleman's question, on paper, according to the state, we have far, far enough groundwater in Lihue. So if the water department thinks there's a problem, they must demonstrate that they can't, that there's not enough groundwater, and only then can they go to the stream. The stream is the last resort because there are other people like Debbie and Fish who have competing uses.
And does it matter if that groundwater is contaminated?
That, if it is, that would be a reasonable justification for not using it.
Okay, and we've got two other callers.
No, on Maui, it's very common for people to have catchment tanks. Even smaller residences might have a catchment tank in their backyard. Would that be a reasonable alternative?
Reasonable alternative.
And we're not supposed to be doing it, though. They don't tend to look at that very hard. Okay, we have another caller. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Alicia?
Yes?
This is Kirk.
Hey, Kirk. Thank you so much for calling in, Department of Water. Have you been able to hear any of this?
Yeah, we're listening. That's what I told you we would do last.
Okay, because I've been kind of trying to get you to call in for about 15 minutes. So, great. So, let me hear your mana'o. We all really want to know what your piece is on this. Thank you so much.
So, we've been listening, and we heard your comments. And basically, what I wanted to do was clarify the project.
Okay.
The project doesn't increase the capacity of the surface water treatment plant. Okay, so basically all it is construction of an 18-inch water line on the Kane Hall Road and then bringing it towards Lihue. So really we're not taking any more water than the design of the plant. You know, one of the things Adam talked about was the EA, and we're in the comment process right now. So, you know, I welcome the public to, you know, if they want an EIS, comment on that. Basically, use this time to voice their concerns.
Kirk, this is Adam. Thank you for calling in. So, again, I understand your perspective or the department's argument that, you know, all we're doing is digging a ditch and dropping a pipe in. But that is essentially identical to Kauai Springs' argument is that, look, all we're asking for is a zoning permit. We're not the ones diverting the water, and we're not asking to take any more water. But that's not what the county countered with, and that's not what the Supreme Court said. The Supreme Court said, if you're asking for a permit to use that water, you bear the burden to demonstrate that it's not impacting the public trust.
Yeah, I understand. So put that down as a comment.
Well, that's a comment, but like, what is the result of that? How come the county isn't needing to follow what they said that Kauai Springs needed to do? How come they don't have to? I mean, they obviously aren't self-imposing that, so how come they don't have to?
We are, by going through the EA process.
So you're doing an environmental assessment?
Yes.
And so, like, if people are listening right now, and they felt that, hey, we're being impacted, like Debbie Jackson, who happens to be in here, or the I don't know if you heard the caller who said, hey, we're gonna close that diversion. You know, we're going to go up. That was sort of I would call that direct action threat. When they're saying that, I mean, what I did see was it said finding of no significant impact. So that, to me, when it says finding of no significant impact, that means that the look was already made. Is that correct? The letter says that.
It's a draft, so that's why we're asking for comments. So if you feel we missed something, then comment on it, and we're obligated to address it.
So that the draft, they would say, no, you couldn't have accurately found no significant impact because people for a decade have been concerned that they're already being impacted with the existing water. Do I have that right?
Yeah. So we would have to address it.
Yeah, so Kirk, this is Adam again. So it sounds like your counter argument, and in the draft EA, you're saying that we're only dropping a pipeline, and the water, in fact, you use the term the source of the water is the treatment plant. That's not where the water originates. So do you not bear some burden to examine the real source of the water?
Well, that's not what we're discussing right now. So, basically...
That's exactly what we're discussing.
No, I mean, I don't want to get into that with you. You can come in, Adam, and we can discuss that.
Okay, so I'm wanting to get this clear. So this pipe, it's actually going from the water treatment plant to the neighborhood. It's not going... it's not going directly to the diversion. It's going to where the diversion brings the water. So if I'm understanding that, so this is new for me, so I'm having an epiphany here. So where there's a divergence, no pun intended, between your two guys' perspectives is you're saying we're just putting a pipe into this water plant. And Adam's saying, yes, but where's the plant getting the water to begin with? So if that water plant has to disperse more water, likelihood is it's coming up from the North Fork of the Wailua River. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right.
So can I ask this? Like, having been up there, how can we make it so some of that water stays going down the river? Like, not all of it, but some of it.
Okay. What I don't want to do right now is get into what Adam was talking about. I want to do is have... If there's a concern, if Adam has a concern, comment on it, please, because then we have to address it.
Okay, so what you're helping all the listeners know is that it is actually very important for you, the water department, you need to hear from us, because that is part of the mechanism that causes this deeper look on the environmental assessment. And you're saying if we want to have no finding of significant impact, people like Debbie or the other caller who is impacted by that dry stream needs to be able to say, I am impacted and this is how. Do I have that correct?
Yes. And, just a correction. It's the pipeline that we're putting in is not connected to directly to the treatment plant.
Okay.
It's connected to existing piping that's further away from the treatment plant.
Okay. So you are going into the same network. So Adam's piece is he's saying I'm just trying to understand. He's saying, okay, his concern is we're increasing the demand for water. And I'm hearing from you as saying, hey, we're just working on our infrastructure, making it more effective in how we move it around.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's helpful for me because I appreciate you calling in, Kirk, and I appreciate you coming in, Adam, because I found myself a little confused about it. Marshall, do we have somebody with a question?
We had a caller that just while you're on the phone wanted to mention that the water at Salt Pond's been shut off, and she doesn't know why or when it's coming back on. Do you happen to know anything about it?
We're looking it up right now.
Okay.
Great.
And I had another person who just texted me who, now did I lose it? Darn it. He said, to ask how comments are addressed, that the Department of the Interior has the same process. So, I don't really totally understand the question asking.
What they're saying is that this process is procedural rather than substantive, so that everybody can submit their comments, right? But this is a self-examination, so they can still declare a FONSI,
despite
what you comment.
Okay. All right. All right. And we are just about at the end of the show. I'm going to take one more caller on the air, possibly with you for a minute or two. And then Jazz with John is coming up at the top of the hour. Marshall, I'm going to take them both at the same time. Does he want to talk on the same time?
No, sorry, Felicia. I don't have a connection with the second caller.
Okay, all right. Okay, so we're gonna have to just about wrap this up, but I appreciate both of you guys coming in, calling in, Debbie with your piece, too. So I feel like I understand better. This is an infrastructure piece that's coming in, so taking the perspective of the county for a moment, they're going, hey, we're just putting another pipe in. It's not that big a deal. We put pipes in all the time. Here's another pipe. Do we have to really make a big issue about it? And you're saying, Adam is saying, well, yes, because I'm worried that it's tapping the same source, and so we're not really looking at capacity issues. And it's a bigger piece.
If I can clarify, that's not my concern.
Okay.
That's what the law says, and that's what the court, Supreme Court precedent is that if you are requesting a permit that will increase the water removal from a stream or use from the stream, you bear the burden to demonstrate no impact on public trust. That's just, and in fact, Kauai County, right? That was their argument. That's what we're saying.
Okay, and we're going to take a second call for just a moment. This person can get 30 seconds to say something, and then we're all getting off the air. And, Kirk, thank you for calling in. So you're going to hear this second person. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. You have 30 seconds.
Hey, aloha. This is Don Hecox. I want to thank Debbie and Adam for all the good information. One other thing that's critical is people don't have to write to all of those different agencies, just OEPC. Clearly, the system needs an EIS. And one of the things that Kirk said is that they're increasing the diameter of the pipe from close to the surface water treatment plant to Lihue, that they don't need to divert any more water because they're diverting it as much as they can. So where is that extra water going today? Well, it's being dumped into the Hanamaulu River.
Okay, so that's a good happy thing. All right, because when I'm hearing that, if it's getting dumped into the Hanamaulu River, that sounds to me like maybe they can open that gate up a little bit more and more water can go down the Wailua River. We're going to have to end it here. So these are just thoughts. And, Kirk, I know that I just threw that in there and maybe you might have a yes or no on that, but that's just what I'm hearing. Is everybody good? Can we say aloha to everybody?
Yeah, we're good.
Aloha.
Okay.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. All right, and that has been Kauai Soapbox. And Masha, thank you for being in here too.
Thank you.
Oops. Try again.
Thank you so much.
Okay, and so Jazz with John is coming up right after the County Council report. And we really appreciate everybody for doing it. And I want to really acknowledge the county for calling in because they're not in an easy position. And I appreciate that, you know, they're listening and that they're working on it and hearing it, you know. So, yay, county. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you, Debbie, Adam, Masha. Hi, John. County Council report.